You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I'm Jamie Dumont.
I'm Rob Russo.
And I am Leslie Kritzer.
And this is
The Fabulous Invalid.
Today, I am very sorry to say that Jennifer Smart is busy working, but Leslie Kritzer is back.
Hi, guys. Oh. Long time.
It has. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. I was in D.C. and then had other stuff, so I'm so excited to be back, and it was so great to see you guys when you came down to see Beetlejuice. Thank you so much.
Oh, my gosh. It was so great to be down and see you in Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
It was a lot
of fun.
That was
really, 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 really great.
That feels like forever ago, and it really wasn't.
It wasn't, but it feels like
a lot has happened.
7 years
yeah,
ago.
Right. A lot has happened. Did you take a vacation after Beetlejuice? Did you get some rest?
I did. I took 1 week right before Christmas. The week before Christmas, I went to Tulum.
Ooh.
Nice. Which was great. Definitely a culinary destination. My friend is a chef there, Jamie.
Ah, excellent.
And so I saw her getting ready to open her new restaurant, which is really incredible. I did that. Went to Cleveland, visited some family there, and my family here. So it's nice, and it's been, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to start rehearsal on the 14th. I'm like...
Is that when you guys start?
Yes, February 14th.
So. You did a lab, right?
We did. It wasn't a lab because our union is striking the labs. It was a negotiated production contract work lab for 3 weeks. So we got paid production contract rehearsal salary.
Excellent.
Which was very nice. Thank you. And a lot of changes, a lot of new stuff. So you guys will be hearing all about that. And
So on the 14th, you'll really kind of dig into the thick of it and really get going.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So when do you get into the theater?
Let's see. So we start on the 14th, probably like 3-4 weeks of rehearsal, and then tech.
And when
it's that short, 3 to 4 weeks of rehearsal.
We have 4 weeks, 5 weeks of previews. Our first preview is March 28th.
That's good. Okay, that was my next question.
Yeah, March 28th, and so I've never done a show in the Winter Garden. I'm very excited.
It's a beautiful theater.
The Funny Girl.
I went to see one of the...
It's the Follies Theater, I'm sorry.
Okay, wait. Is it the original Follies Theater?
Yes. It's the original. Funny Girl was before. Yes,
Funny Girl
64. Was before, and yes, it's the original Follies Theater. It's the theater of MAME, mm-hmm. As Rob said. It's the theater of Cats, Rob's favorite show.
It was a big deal. Cats at the Winter Garden.
Was a big deal. No. I know.
Don't minimize it.
I'm excited.
It's a great theater, yeah. and you have a big, massive stage, mm-hmm. and it's
the widest orchestra on Broadway.
So, you know, when you go into a theater with the principals, there's a pecking order of who gets first choice and everything. So I said, well, maybe I'll get a really good dressing room if you put me on the top floor because no one likes to walk up that many steps. So I said, I'll take the top, Maddie.
And your legs are going to look hot,
right? Yeah, it's a good workout.
That's a Stairmaster Express.
Well, the best part about the Winter Garden is stage right, when you walk off stage, there's a little nook that was Barbara Streisand's dressing room.
But they finished it. They changed it, right?
The space is still there, but yes, it has been renovated. It was used, I think, for School of Rock as like a quick change spot. But you can still go and stand in the space, and it's pretty cool.
A pot of blue Norfolk, sir. I've never played it
Well, I have to ask you, did you put your house on the market? Are you moving back to New York?
I'm so
What's going on? There was a lot of drama last night on your Instagram.
I mean, I wound up eating a whole bag of Pop Chips just because I was so mad. And I've been working so hard. I had a bag of Pop Chips, a Coke Zero, which I never drink anymore. I was so angry. No, I mean, I don't know, guys. I've put 7 years of time in New Jersey. I kind of want to come back.
You've done your time.
You love your house, though, right?
I do. It's just a lot of, and I'm not complaining because it's literally like white girl, beyond white girl problems. It's just, I have a lot of friends who want to move to the burbs. A lot of them who have children, which is great because there's schools. I do not have kids. It's just a lot of work to have a home.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of upkeep. So when you're in our lifestyle, I don't have as much time for it to.
Or the flexibility. Right?
Yeah. And. So I'd like to have the best of both worlds. I'd like to have a pied-à-terre in New York and a house, and please send me $4 million. Thank you.
My dream is an apartment uptown and an apartment downtown. You know, that way.
That is hilarious.
Have the option, right? That's my pied-à-terre, right?
The closest I can get to that is my husband is a born and bred Los Angelino, and he loves to drive a car, and we've owned a car in the city most of the time that we've lived here. And there was a very long period of time where he would drive to work. And we had a garage downtown near our apartment, and then he had a garage on 42nd Street near the office. And he would drive from one garage to the next. And it would take... Now, mind you, we live above the Wall Street 2-3 stop. So you're talking 11 minutes on a train or 45 in a car. Yeah. And he would drive every single day. Like the knucklehead that he is.
And I bet the combined rent on those two parking garages equaled your mortgage. Right?
No, because I negotiated a deal because when the economy fell out in 2008 and everybody was freaking out, I called the garage company. I was like, this is what I'm going to pay, right? I need a garage downtown and I need a garage here and I'm going to pay this amount and I'm going to pay a year in advance and then we're going to lock in this deal. And they did. They were like, okay.
The art of
the
deal.
Get me a deal because I have a
Do not say that, Rob.
Bruce little Donald Trump. Trump on our hands.
No.
Oh, my God. Anti.
Take it or leave it.
Fucking nut job.
I love driving, though. It's very zen.
It's very zen.
It's very zen. You can kind of come down. Mm-hmm. You have
Listen
your own little
music,
space.
You know.
Do you own a car? Podcast?
I do, of course. Of course, of course. Yes. And that's one thing I would miss, getting in my car, going to Target, getting in my car, and driving home. And I also love driving in the city, and I'd have a car here also. I would love that.
I like driving in the city because of the challenge.
I've driven here my whole life, my husband will... It's like driving Miss Daisy. He will not drive in the city. He's like, don't make me do it. Don't make me. I was like, seriously? He would make me drive in the city after surgery. No, he's Daisy.
He's Daisy. Yeah. Okay.
He's even Daisy in the suburbs. He's the worst driver.
Driving Miss Vadim.
God, you're the worst. Yeah, he's the worst driver. He's such a breaker. I'm like, oh, my God, drive this car. So I drive most of the time. But he is a good long-distance driver. So when we go to Cleveland, he drives. Mm. So that's all I got.
That's all you got. All right. Well, on that note, I think maybe we should welcome our guest.
Yes.
Yes.
Do it.
Oh, we're excited.
Cool.
What kind of Pop Chips were they, though?
Sea salt.
Today, we are very pleased to have Jacob Dickey. Jacob is currently in the ensemble of Aladdin on Broadway. This summer, he played Moses in Stephen Schwartz's The Prince of Egypt. He is a lover of both dogs and cats.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you need to explain that a little bit. What does that mean?
Dogs and cats.
Just because everybody's like, are you a dog person or are you a cat person? And I'm just very much equally in love with both. I think I am a cat. Personality-wise, I'm more of a cat.
Yeah. Spirit animal.
Personality-wise, I'm more of a cat, but then dogs just bring so much joy in my life. So I connect with cats, but I'm in love with dogs. So
as Aaron Kaufman taught me a couple of weeks ago, you can like more than one thing.
Thank you.
This was news to Jamie.
Yes.
This was new?
No, I'm a very black and white person.
You are.
Most people are.
This or that. Yeah. And it's like cats, nothing else. Motherfucker, dogs, go away. Cats are cool.
Oh, right?
That's just how my... my brain works. But now I know you can like
now
more
you
than
one
can thing.
Be both.
And so I dogs and cats, yay.
Dogs
so
and cats. Beautiful.
Well, Jacob, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We're on the table here today. Before we dive into the really hard-hitting questions, really like serious, deep questions, we always like to start off with a couple fun sort of, you know, out-of-the-box ones.
Okay.
So as you're performing on Broadway 8 times a week, what do you do to relax?
I feel like my relaxation is very typical. I'm the type of person just, I don't like to go out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So my relaxation is like alone time on my couch watching probably like Extraordinary Homes on Netflix.
Yes.
Anything with British hosts is very calming to me. Yeah. So, and you know, Great British Bake Off is, I'm all caught up, but that's my like, if I could watch that every night and just sit on the couch with like tea, then that would be it.
I've never watched it.
Am
I missing
either.
Out?
Yes.
Oh my God, I have to
It's the most pleasant competition show in existence.
But it's just people baking, right?
Yes.
But isn't it? It's so much more, though, isn't
it? It's so much more.
Before. What
it's about
makes
life.
It more special?
Yeah.
What makes it special is that it's not about the drama. Like American competition shows are like, bah, like she melted
right.
my ice cream on purpose. But this one is truly like, do you want some help? And it's all in a British accent. And like,
lovely.
It's just really nice.
Oh, okay.
People are obsessed. No, it's a real,
it's
yeah,
so
real phenomenon.
It's a like a huge
yeah,
phenomenon.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
All right.
Deal.
All right.
So taking a step back to baby Jacob.
Baby.
you were raised in a military family, right?
I was.
Yeah. So does that mean you moved around a lot as a kid or?
Yeah. I was born in California and we moved, I think we moved 8 times by the time I was a junior in high school. We lived in Germany for 3 years, but Virginia Beach was like our last junior year to now.
Mm-hmm.
So Virginia is really
so that's
my home.
Home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mom was in the military, my dad was in the military, and my younger brother, all in the Marine Corps.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
And my older brother is a gay chef, and here I am.
Yay.
So, tucked in the middle.
Where is he a chef?
LA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was actually a chef here. He opened up Bobby Flay's restaurant.
Wow.
In Soho, and then went out west.
So I was a chef, professional.
Oh, really?
For many years.
Hence the onion tarts.
And yeah. I actually worked for Bobby Flay.
No way.
I did. I did.
Yeah, he opened Gatto when it opened, I don't know, like 4 years ago.
Wow.
And now he's out in L.A.
We should swap horror stories.
Oh my gosh, I'm sure he has many.
I actually worked for Bobby Flay in a failed venture. He tried to start his own catering company. This was 20 years ago, and it did not go well. So it was not a pleasant experience. But he's a brilliant chef. I don't mean to say he's not. Anyway.
Oh no, sure.
We digress.
Sure.
Okay, so how did from your family having this military background? How did this start for you? I mean, that's like. So interesting.
Yeah. I mean, my family's all very musical. So my dad like plays the drums and the guitar, and younger brother plays the guitar. My mom grew up singing. But none of them were theater people. None of them were performers in any way. I just kind of fell into it because I started singing in church. My family's also Protestant. I was raised Protestant Christian. And I was homeschooled. So there's a lot of things.
Wow.
Wait. Let's, tiny
out.
Pause.
That's always the one.
Tell
where
us,
like,
yeah.
Say more.
Tell us a little bit about homeschool. Because
yes.
I don't think anybody at this table knows
no.
what that is. Or, I mean, we know what it is,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the experience, yeah.
I was homeschooled till 7th grade.
Mm-hmm.
Was that because you were moving so much?
Yeah,
or?
Exactly.
Yeah, it was just easier that way.
My older brother had really bad experiences as a young kid with public schools. And my mom just immediately was like, I don't want that. And so, and we were already moving around. So she homeschooled me and my two brothers, me until 8th grade, and you know, kind of fluctuating throughout there. But I lived for it. It was amazing. We woke up at 9, finished our schooling at noon, and played all day. And then I did community theater, and we could go do all the activities with our church. And that's where I was singing. A lot of that was because I was homeschooled.
Was it a difficult transition going from being homeschooled into a proper, well, I assume it was a public school?
Yeah, it was.
Did you go to private school?
It was in Germany. It actually was. It was in Germany.
So that's a double. What, do you speak German?
No. 9.
So so it was an American school, presumably.
It was. It was on an American base.
But was that a difficult transition after being homeschooled and then suddenly you're in a classroom with other children and different sets of rules? And
no, it was. For my younger brother and I, it was a very welcome change we were raised very social. Like, we played sports and, like I said, community theater. So we were always hanging out with other kids our age, even if we weren't doing school with them. But by the time we got to eighth and my younger brother sixth grade, we were just so ready to, like, go to public school and have a backpack and, like, be cool kids. So we loved it. We lived for it. My older brother, too, he always hated school, but even if he excelled at it.
Ile et teris iactatus et alto. We superum saevae memorem unonis.
All that's known in history and science, overthrown at school, at home by blind men. You doubt them and soon they bark and hound you, till everything you say is just another bad about you. All they say is trust in what is written. Wars are made, and somehow that is wisdom. Thought is suspect, and money is their idol. And nothing is okay unless it's scripted in their Bible. But I know there's so much more to find just in looking through myself and not at them. Still I know to trust my own true mind and to say there's a way.
So you started in Aladdin 2 years ago,
yeah,
in the ensemble,
yeah,
and then you left to play Aladdin in Chicago for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever it was.
Yeah, 2 months. Yeah.
2 months.
Yeah, 8 weeks.
And then you came back to the show, and you've been doing it ever since, on and off. But then you also took a break and
went to
Tuacon, which,
yes,
is the big amphitheater in
Utah.
St. George?
Yes.
St. George, Utah.
Yeah, St. George, Utah.
Yeah, I've been there.
Oh, yeah? You've been to Tuacon?
I saw Little Mermaid there,
oh, wow,
years,
yeah,
ago. Probably four or five, six.
Is this a testing ground for Disney properties? Are they?
Actually, it kind of is.
Yeah, well, they're doing
it. I hadn't heard of it.
Tell us about Tuacon.
Okay, so I did. I took a leave of absence for... It was a very long leave of absence. It was 5.5 months,
mm-hmm,
to do Prince of Egypt. Yeah.
Awesome.
It was amazing. 5.5 months to do Prince of Egypt because it's a new musical. Stephen George, yeah, was working with it. And I was like, this is, like I said, I was raised a Christian homeschool military kid. So, like, Prince of Egypt, yeah, was my Aladdin.
Oh,
and so Moses,
wow,
was an epic dream role that I thought would never happen because it wasn't a stage adaptation. And then it was. And then I got Moses. So it was incredible. But yeah, Tuacon is truly in the middle of, like, Red Canyons.
That's genius. Oh.
It was perfect for Prince of Egypt.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It is beautiful.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah.
Oh, they didn't have any set, but they did. But
it's a massive open air amphitheater,
so
right?
It's outdoors.
I mean, it must be 3,000, 4,000.
I think it's like 3,000
seats.
It's about 3,000.
You're surrounded by these beautiful red cliffs everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's in
How
Utah.
Perfect a setting, for
right?
Oh,
I mean, that's
for
brilliant!
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
oh,
running
I bet.
Through actual
How can you
sand.
Really recreate? It'll right. never be. I mean, atmospherically, that.
No, it'll never.
Unbelievable.
And they have all this water that they can do. They flood the stage.
God. Oh, that's right. Yeah, they do have this weird water feature thing.
They
yeah,
do.
Water can come over the hill,
Whoa.
Or
they have like a waterfall that then floods into the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah, they
what?
Use that.
Can we do a road trip to Utah for the?
It's like a 2 hour drive from Vegas. That's what we did. We went to
Vegas
for an hour and a half.
Wow.
There's like one fancy restaurant in town.
There is the Painted Pony.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
If you're a New Yorker and you're in the middle of Utah, you're going to find
right.
that one little place.
Yes.
You're
going to
find the Painted Pony.
You're going to find
the
Painted Pony.
It
took
me 2 seconds to say it.
Yeah.
Painted, it sounds more like a whorehouse.
Saloon.
Okay, so you're in Utah, you're doing this role. I should say that your Moses did not look like the Charlton Heston Moses that we're all used to.
I was thinking that too.
Your Moses was a little younger and hipper
and
prettier.
So
you're doing the show, open air theater. There have to be some kinds of horror stories in terms of weather related things.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to me, the horror story was just like every day because the temperature in it's the Utah desert.
Fluctuates, right?
It doesn't fluctuate as much as I thought it would.
Mm.
But we would start our shows at sunset, which in the summer is 8:45. So we started our shows at 8:45. And I think we had our hottest show starting at 108 degrees.
Oh. Right? How do you sing in that?
You
How
don't.
Do that? How did you do that?
You just... I won an award at the end of the season for drinking the most water during a show because they had water bottles all over the stage, because Moses, also in that production, I left the stage for 10 minutes in a 3-hour musical.
Wow.
And for some reason ran out of every scene, literally just like sprinting. So
that was your direction?
That was my direction. Okay. Was like, and run up those stairs. He was very—
get those tablets.
It's just like high stakes. But yeah, just so much water. And actually it took me like 2 months into the run to really figure out how my voice works in that environment. And then the weather shifted. And by the end of the season, we had a show that started at 50 degrees in total darkness.
Wow.
And I was wearing just a skirt. So, yeah, that was one of those experiences. I was like, if I can do this, I think Aladdin is fine. I think I can do Aladdin.
Yeah, literally.
In an air-conditioned, heated.
What a shift.
That'll make the Muni look like nothing, right?
Ooh, I don't know.
I've done the Muni. I got my credit card there. And yeah. That is, I mean, it's hot, but not
it's
that.
Humid, right?
Well, it was hot, but dry heat. When I was in Vegas this past year, it hit that 110-degree mark, and we were in the little stupid outlet mall, and I was like, I am sitting in Michael Kors until this thing passes, like, because it is so, you feel faint. I don't know how you did that.
Well, I think mainly for me it was okay because, like I said, in the first act, I'm truly just wearing a skirt, so it was kind of nice, but then
breezy.
Very breezy, had shorts underneath.
Would you go back?
I would go back for the right show.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I went out there for the show, not for the theater.
So this was a revised version of Prince of Egypt, right?
Or a
reworked version?
Yeah, it's the third iteration of the stage version. So they had done one in Palo Alto, one in somewhere overseas. Mm. And this was the first like full-scale epic. Let's do it like the movie as best we can.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was reworked. We weren't workshopping it or anything, but Stephen did come in and fix some things that needed to be fixed. And I mean, that was a dream. That's why.
Is there a life for the show beyond this?
Yeah, rumor is there is.
Oh, good.
No one really knows what or when, but him and producers and everybody came to see it really liked that style of the show because it's how I imagined it. I mean, it's full out. Awesome. It's one of the most epic stories ever. When you believe, somehow you will. Now you will. You will when you believe. You will when you.
Into Aladdin world in your present life?
Yeah.
In Aladdin?
Well, Aladdin was my debut, and 2 years ago.
It's a city where a pitiless nobody can turn out to be a noble somebody. It's a place where a princess would give up her crown for true love, but her father, the Sultan, is a stickler for the ancient ways, and our hero's pals are as thick as thieves. Adorable. But thieves. Oh, and did I mention? Everybody sings!
Arabian nights, like Arabian days. More often than not, are hotter than hot, in a lot of good ways. Arabian nights.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Tell us a little bit about Aladdin Camp.
Oh, Aladdin Camp. Mm-hmm. Right. It's pretty much just, they do it for Aladdin and Genie. And they get they have a pool of actors that they would like to at some point see for Aladdin or maybe for Aladdin covers, what have you. And you just come in, and for me, there were eight of us who could all potentially play Aladdin. And we just, through 4 days, worked on the songs, worked on the scenes with the associates, saw the show, learned some of the dance. Pretty much, they just prepped us very intensely for the final audition. And usually in Aladdin Camp, you film it, and it's kind of just like put on record. When I did it, Casey Nicola was there to see it at the end.
Is that unusual?
I guess it was. He just happened to be in town and was like, yeah, I'm going to come see the finals.
Depends on what replacement it is.
Right. Sure, yeah.
Depends on order. If it's like a sixth replacement, yes, it would be rare. But if it's a second, no, he would be there. The team, like him and Casey Hutchin, they would all be there. It depends on how many replacements.
Right, because at this point, Aladdin has been on Broadway, what, 5 years?
Yeah, coming up in the 5-year interval.
And so we're talking about 3 years into the run, more or less, when you're doing Aladdin Camp.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and then that was when they were like, we don't have any spots open right now, but this is for the future. And then it just worked out that Rodney Ingram left to play Raoul 2 weeks later. Mm. And then they called me in, and then I started the next day.
So you started as ensemble, but also as a cover, correct?
I started as ensemble a cover, but it was a time when Adam Jacobs was leaving to do the tour, and we had a gap between when Telly came in. So there was a 3-month, more than that, gap where we didn't have an Aladdin. So they really prepped me for Aladdin, which worked out because my debut was actually as Aladdin.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Went straight to the top, baby. Wow.
Titular character.
My first step. Yeah, it was the day after my put-in. Josh De La Cruz, who was this cover and who was on for Aladdin for that month, lost his voice. And they were like, well, you've done your put-in. You want to go on?
Oh, my God. Okay, so you've got to tell us about that performance.
Okay.
What was it like? I mean, talk us through that day from finding out that you're going to be...
First of all, wait. Did the put-in, did all of the people show up for the put-in? Were there a lot of... Because sometimes when you go on, just for people that don't know, when you have a put-in a lot of times, sometimes not all of the real people are there.
Right.
Sometimes swings that are covering those people come and do those tracks. Doesn't mean that the actual company all the time is really there.
Yeah, that's most often it's like that.
Right.
Most often
so sometimes like you're not doing it like with, you know, when I did Hairspray and I had a put in for Tracy. I don't believe that Harvey was at my put in the first time or it wasn't Harvey. Bruce Valanche. I don't know if he was there, but there were people that weren't there. So
yeah.
When you do a put in for people that don't know, it's not like you're getting the
full experience.
Thing.
Yeah.
So
you covered Tracy?
I covered Tracy, I covered Velma, and I covered the female authority figure.
Yes.
That's a wide swath.
That was my
basically all the principal female characters.
Duty.
Did you ever, I'm sorry, hold
but
on,
yes,
Jacob,
yes,
we'll get back to you in a second.
It's really tough when you have a put-in and you don't have all of the real people that are going to be in your actual show. So it's, you kind of have to like, but you, at this point, you're so ready.
Right, that was
yeah,
it.
So now continue to tell
me. Yeah. So that was the thing. I mean, they had, because they were so nervous a situation like this would happen, because coverage was so limited, they fully, my first 3 weeks of rehearsal were just Aladdin and everything he has to do.
And this is your 3 weeks of rehearsal post-Aladdin camp. This is when you were actually hired for the role.
Yes.
So you really are prepared, more so than you may have been without camp. And right. I mean.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, the materials are his big songs, and you know, the scenes are his big scenes. So I was as prepared as possible, and I think actually Courtney Reed was at my put-in, which was very helpful because her scenes with Jasmine are super important, and the carpet and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got a call at 10:30 in the morning. It was a Saturday matinee, and they were just like, "Hey, how do you feel about it?" And I actually, looking back on it, was I just like immediately went zen. I just immediately was like, this is what you wanted to do your whole life. You've done 3 weeks of rehearsal solely on this part and you feel ready. And I just did it.
Wow.
I only almost cried once.
When was that?
Proud of Your Boy. Mm-hmm. The song Proud of Your Boy, but at the end. The end of act one is...
I just felt it.
It's just kind of like your center stage, right at the edge of the stage, in this like beautiful costume, singing to your mom.
Tell me that I've been a louse and a loafer. You won't get a fight here, no ma'am. Say I'm a gold brick, a goof off, no good, but that couldn't be all that I am. Water flows under the bridge, let it pass, let it go. There's no good reason that you should believe me, not yet. I know. Smarter or handsome or wise, I'll do my best. What else can I do? Since I wasn't born perfect like Dad or you, Mom, I will try hard to make you proud of your boy.
So that was my debut, and it was actually also my boyfriend's birthday, and he got to see me as my Broadway debut.
Oh, wow.
In Aladdin.
Good present.
It was a good present. And then he saw
well done.
Sunday in the Park with George that night, which was my gift to him.
Did you guys go out after? How did you celebrate?
No, I was so worried I was going to go on Sunday.
That you're like,
I was like, I'm going to go right to bed. I can go to bed. But
did
I didn't.
You?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
But you went on in the ensemble, right?
A week later, my official debut.
Got it.
Which was way more nerve-wracking than Aladdin. Because Aladdin, like, if you end up at center stage, like,
there's
it's
the
fine.
Yeah, right.
Or people will push. You're on left stage like, a little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The spot will follow you. But when you're in the ensemble for a show like this, with, like, and my track is you're holding a pole, you throw the pole, you pick up the thing, you push the thing, you toss this guy, you catch Aladdin on the thing. Mm. So that was...
A lot of details.
Very nerve-wracking, yes.
And a lot of costume changes.
Yeah.
A lot of... That's a huge ensemble.
It's huge, and a huge amount of dressers.
Do you tap dance?
You learned, right?
I tap dance.
You don't have to answer that
on
question.
On Broadway. No, I am not mic'd. We have those things where like there's half the ensemble's mic'd who have very clean sounds.
Right.
No, I don't have clean
so you're
sounds.
You're just kind
of mic'd meaning their feet are mic'd?
Their feet are mic'd. Yeah. There's a mic wired down their leg.
Really? Yeah. That started with 42nd Street.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the 42nd Street revival was the first show to mic the taps. Yeah.
There's eight of us, not me, but eight of the ensemble are mic'd and have super clean, perfect sounds. And then the other of us, you know, I can sell it.
So do you have taps on your shoes, or are you just doing the movements? So okay,
I do have taps.
So you are making sound.
Yes, yes. We're all making sound.
It's just not mic'd.
Yes.
We didn't do that in Elf when we had taps. We didn't have...
You have mics?
Not, we had floor mics.
Well, wasn't a Disney production?
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't Disney. Yeah. They want to
They've thought of everything. I think it's also a specific, like, you know... Well, I don't know the reason. We should find that out.
Yeah,
Rob's going to find
that.
I'm going to do some research on that.
But okay, so I have a tap question
because this
is just because I'm always curious. How do you walk on stage with taps on your shoes and not make tapping sounds?
I don't. I actually have a segment before where I do have to walk and do this magic trick with the box in taps. But you just can't hear that in the audience when there's just two of you because there's just two of us on stage with taps. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So and there's no special walk to mask.
I think there is.
It's kind of like a heel toe situation. Like,
yeah.
You roll
through. Kind of heel toe it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there is. But there's the only moment where there's people on stage in our show who have taps who aren't tapping. There's just two of us spinning a box around. So I don't. we've never gotten a note on it.
You actually so would be fine. Like, if you put on a pair of tap shoes, you would instinctually, it's like walking across trying not to make noise in a room.
Yeah.
Like, you'd instinctually know, you'd feel it. You'd know how to do
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, it's always, I tapped in high school. I was Tulsa and Gypsy. I learned how to tap for that, but you know, not well, and I don't remember any of it. But I've always wanted it, so thank you for indulging me, question. I'm a huge, huge fan of Aladdin. Mm. I think it's. I love the movie. I love the stage version. It's one of those stories that it gets me here. I don't know what it. You know, the misfit boy, all of that stuff. And I mean, it's funny when you break it down, right? Like. He does have some, he does skate some moral thin ice, here and there.
Sure, he's a big liar.
Yeah, for one.
We're going to say it on this podcast.
He's a big liar.
But
very charming.
I don't want to get you in trouble.
No, that's it's a no.
But I just love that production. I think it's a great story, and I think Disney did a great job with it.
And Casey Nicholaw, for my money, is just... You can't have a better director choreographer on Broadway.
No, he knows how to sell a number.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
And he really knows how to, he knows comedy. He knows how to let people be funny and do what they do and then kind of tweak around you, which is, I love him for that.
Yeah.
I
love You've him. Worked with him.
Yeah, I've done two shows with him. Oh my God, I'm playing. Yeah, Something Rotten and an Elf. Mm. Yeah, but when I saw Prom, he did Prom, right?
Yep.
Yeah. The White Room. Yeah. He let those group of actors, which are some of the funniest people on the planet,
literally
do them.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, he gets out of the way and then tweaks around it. And it's
And it's the tweaking. Good. He's a master at managing the tone of a piece. Yeah.
And he'll still come back. They told me, Brooks and all that, he'll still come back and be like, oh, okay, guys.
And
I'm sure he does.
Well, and that's why the genie is so funny in our show, because he allowed James to be... Mm-hmm. as ridiculous and absurd and have as much fun as he can. And now every genie since then has been doing that in their own way.
Right.
And that's why he steals the show. He's brilliant.
Yeah. I was there the night after he won his Tony and he pulled it out of his pocket. there's a moment in the show where he's...
Yes.
The genie pulls out like a...
Statue of Liberty or something.
Statue of Liberty. And he pulled out his Tony. I was also there the night that... and I will get her name wrong. Marshalla Wallace...
Marisha
Wallace went on as Kasim.
Yeah. our only female.
Yeah.
Babcock. She went on as Babcock. Yes.
Yeah.
Sort of, I love her.
Probably last minute, whatever.
I wasn't there for this, but I've heard it. Yeah, it's she was legend now.
Jamie goes to Aladdin a lot, apparently.
Name a memorable performance. He might have been there.
You are Aladdin.
I am a freak.
Good pals, blood brothers, me and three others, Babcock, Omar,
Aladdin,
Kasim. Four friends, none closer, get mad, heck no sir, not us four strong, a permanent team. Four guys out pounding the pavements of Agrabah, four guys with one Arabian dream, to stay this lazy and play like crazy, Babcock, Omar, Aladdin, Kasim.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. You are on social media.
Mm-hmm. And I like this question.
Your social media handle is Big Ugly Jacob. What does that mean?
There's a story there, huh?
There has to be something.
There's a story there. It's from high school. One of my best friends, we were in drama class playing charades, and I was standing up on the stage with a clue trying to think of something to do, and she just screamed out Big Ugly Jacob in the middle of the theater, and ever since then all my friends in high school called me Big Ugly Jacob, and then it was my email for too long
gmail.com
Big Ugly Jacob at gmail.com.
So anybody wants to email you,
well, not anymore. Not anymore.
Production
company someday. Yes. Production. No, but I'm not gonna change it. It's so, I've had a lot of people being like, "What? That's so sad." I'm like,
yeah.
No, it's I don't actually think I'm.
No. Yes, I think so. I think if you look at the handle, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then when you follow you on social media, you definitely don't think that's. I mean, I'm not saying you're narcissistic, but you definitely don't think of yourself as ugly.
I don't think of myself as a hideous.
Not at all.
I don't.
It's clear that it's funny. It's clear that there's a story, which is why I asked. Yeah.
I said we'd have the hard hitting question.
Yeah, that was hard.
All right, so I got a really hard one. Yeah. So anyone who knows me knows that I am technically challenged. I just recently got on Spotify, mostly because Rob Russo.
And Rob, I have a question because I've been using it also more.
So we'll
do a little session.
Following other people.
Well, all right. Since we're saying that, I will also say that the Fabulous Invalid is finally on Spotify as of this week. So yay to that.
Very exciting.
So this morning when I was having my coffee and I was trolling you on the internet, as I do,
it's research preparation.
Yes, I noticed that you have a Spotify public playlist.
I guess.
Right. Okay. And two things that I noticed. One, you like Christmas music, like a lot.
Okay. Okay. Yes. So here's the thing. I don't really know how Spotify works. Like, I listen, all my music is on Spotify, but when it comes to public playlists or stuff, that was made years ago by my boyfriend and I.
Okay.
When we were long distance and we just have never made it non-public. Okay. But yes, it is our.
So I don't need to ask about the Celine Dion and all that. Like, I can just leave that alone.
I mean, you can ask about Celine Dion. I'll leave it alone.
But I do want to know. You have a playlist, and I think maybe you don't know now, but called My Hero. What is that? Are those songs? Are they like hero? So they're like artists you respond to, or
no? That was. I mean, my boyfriend and I have been together for 7 years.
Yeah,
and. Long distance many, many times, as it goes.
Is he an actor as well?
He's an actor as well, yeah.
So, there you go.
But that playlist specifically, we along with the Christmas playlist, we decided to make, one time we were long distance, we're like, we should make each other playlists. Like, just like what we listen to when we think of the other person. And that one is one I made for Sean, because I don't know when I started calling him my hero, but I call him my hero, and he calls me his prince. Super mushy. We don't actually know where either of those came from years later now, but they're very sweet.
It happens like that. You don't remember.
No idea.
It doesn't matter. You know, my big ugly Jacob is Trout. So my husband calls me Trout, and it's my email. It's my everything is Trout or Trout in NYC. And again, you know, it's for me, it's not a very interesting story. We were just on an early date 25 years ago, and he looked at me and said, Trout? And I said, yes. And then we laughed. And that was it.
Like, that's it.
Not a great story, right? But these things stick, right? These names with your partners or your friends or whatnot. All right. Well, we want to let you get out of here fairly soon so you can go do
it's
your
fine.
Do, really do your job.
Absolutely. The last thing you say, where do you live in the city?
I live in Washington Heights.
And do you have a favorite restaurant in New York?
Favorite restaurant in New York?
At the top of your head. That you're going to.
Can I have two? One for brunch? And, okay.
One for brunch. This is what we love.
You really are gay.
I am so gay. Brunch is, it's kind of basic, but it's not because it's amazing. It's Jacob's Pickles.
Yes, okay.
I went there for my birthday brunch. They had the Funfetti Biscuit, which is their special biscuit of the season.
People love to know this stuff.
The Funfetti
Biscuit. I'm taking notes.
Biscuits are big. Yes, that's my favorite brunch spot, and it's worth the wait, I think. And actually, okay.
Wait, is it Funfetti like the cakes?
Well, so they do. Yeah, with sprinkles. Like they do a special biscuit. I can do a podcast about Jacob's
biscuits.
They do a special biscuit like every season, I think. And this one is Funfetti. They had the one I've had is s'mores. They had like an apple cinnamon one. But then my favorite, which is funny because now Sean and I have been vegetarian for a few months now, but Cafe Cubana. Cuban sandwich is my all-time favorite meal of all time.
Where is Cafe Cubana?
It's in is it Cafe Cubana? Cafe Habana. Mm-hmm. I always mix up the name, but it's in Soho.
So we're going to ask our final question that we ask everyone. Bum, bum, bum. And that is, what is that show that did it for you? Was there a particular show or movie that made you want to go into this profession?
I think for me, I don't know if it made me want to go into the profession, but it's the one that I remember watching the most as a kid was Singin' in the Rain. Mm-hmm. It was my mom's favorite. I actually recently realized that this goes back way back to the question of how it came. I recently realized that I was my mom's movie buddy because my brothers didn't like the movies she watched, but I would always watch old movies with her, and they were always frequently musicals. And so I realized it was like an epiphany I had that sitting and watching movies with my mom is where my love for musicals came from. And Singing in the Rain was always...
hard to top, right?
Yeah, it just always stuck with me in the imagery. And when she's on the ladder with her big, like, thing blowing in the back.
Scarf blowing?
Yes.
It's a perfect film. What's your favorite film?
Oh, that's a big question.
Top two?
Brunch or dinner?
Brunch or dinner? Do I have a brunch movie brunch, and a dinner movie?
Yes, I said top two.
That's a really hard question.
Yeah. Okay. I love movies and I watch all types of movies, but my all-time favorite movie that I can watch and have watched a million times is You've Got Mail. Okay. For me, that was like growing up, like, that's New York and that's love.
Did that make you want to move to New York?
100%. To move to New York and like sharpen bouquets of pencils and all that stuff. And that's my all-time favorite. Well, when I walked by Cafe Lalo for the first time moving to the city, I freaked out. I didn't even know I was on that
street anymore.
It's not?
Is it?
I thought it was still
like
there.
I walked by and it was gone.
I haven't heard. I don't know. I don't keep track of Cafe Lalo, but I would have cried.
Okay, we're going to Google that right now while you tell us what your other favorite... What's your dinner? What's your dinner movie?
What's my dinner movie? You know what? One of my all-time favorite is Stranger Than Fiction.
Oh. Oh, I never saw that.
Will Ferrell, yeah. Maggie Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm. It's just an incredible movie.
Yeah.
And I love the vibe, and I love the story, and I love the ending. And also, I think Emma Thompson. It's Emma Thompson. Mm-hmm. Totally robbed of an Oscar nomination for that movie because it's one of my favorite performances of hers, which is saying a lot because she's incredible.
Yeah.
But that her performance in that, smoking cigarettes in the rain, it's like all I can think about.
Now I want to watch this movie.
It's,
yeah, I have to watch it.
It's, and Maggie Gyllenhaal, she's such a badass.
Okay, well, finally, I was mistaken. I'm sorry, Cafe Lalo, you are still open.
Okay,
you're
good.
Open until 3 a.m.
The record, by
thank
the
you,
way.
Lalo.
If anybody wants, like, peanut butter cake.
After the show, if you want to.
Yeah,
that place is insane. Yeah, okay. Well, Jacob Dickey, you are delightful. Oh, thank you so much for coming down, and being a little silly with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Rob here with You May Be Wondering. Jacob Dickey is currently in the ensemble of Aladdin at the New Amsterdam Theater, one of 10 shows that Disney Theatrical Productions has presented on Broadway since its founding in 1993, under the leadership of Peter Schneider and Thomas Schumacher, its current president. You may be wondering about Disney's history on Broadway and the role it played in restoring the New Amsterdam Theater, a jewel of 42nd Street, back to legitimacy in the 1990s. While today The Lion King may be the show most people associate with Disney on Broadway, you must remember it was Beauty and the Beast that came first. Following the smash Academy Award-winning success of the animated feature in 1991, adapting Beauty and the Beast for the stage was a no-brainer, especially since its critically acclaimed score was written by Alan Menken and Howard Ashman, musical theater writers who had made their name in the early 80s with the runaway off-Broadway hit Little Shop of Horrors, and then had been recruited to Hollywood by Disney to pen the score for The Little Mermaid and then Beauty and the Beast. New York Times critic Frank Rich had called Menken and Ashman's score to the film the best Broadway musical score of 1991. And so, Michael Eisner, president of Disney, greenlit a Broadway musical adaptation, which opened at the Palace Theater on April 18, 1994, and ran a whopping 5,461 performances, closing in July 2007. Signaling its commitment to live theater on Broadway, as part of the 42nd Street development project to revitalize the Times Square area, Disney entered into a 49-year lease with the city to take possession of the decrepit New Amsterdam Theater in 1995, launching a $34 million restoration project. Built in 1902 and 1903 by leading impresarios Erlinger and Claw, the New Amsterdam had opened as the largest theater in New York and was home to the famous Ziegfeld Follies from 1913 to 1927. From its Beaux-Arts facade to the stunning Art Nouveau interior, in its heyday, the New Amsterdam was heralded as one of the most gorgeous theaters in New York, if not the world, celebrated for its architecture and decor, and its infamous rooftop gardens that featured more risque entertainment. By 1937, the New Amsterdam was converted into a movie theater, its elaborate facade destroyed and replaced by an Art Deco marquee, thus beginning its decades-long descent into disrepair, stripping the once palatial auditorium of all its grandeur. Designated a landmark in 1979, but closed in 1981, Broadway theater owner Jimmy Niederlander bought the New Amsterdam in 1982 with the intention of restoring it. But that project proved to be cost prohibitive. Keep in mind, Times Square was still bombed out, and Broadway, though on the upswing, was still not booming like it is today. The Schuberts had considered the New Amsterdam as a possible home for the musical Cats, but the presence of prostitutes and drug dealers right outside on 42nd Street killed that idea, especially for a family musical. Several years later, Niederlander gave Hal Prince a tour of the theater, pitching it as the perfect house for the Phantom of the Opera. But once again, the neighborhood was deemed too seedy and unsafe. Crushed by real estate taxes and the potential cost of renovation, in 1992, Niederlander turned the theater back over to the city, whose 42nd Street development project was looking for ways to preserve the historic nature of the area while cleaning it up. Big tenants like Disney, AMC, which took over the old Empire Theater, and Madame Tussauds were the perfect solution. With them as beachheads, the tide began to turn, and by the early 2000s, 42nd Street was booming again. Clean, safe, and now a major destination for tourists from all around the world. Once facing total destruction, Disney meticulously restored the New Amsterdam Theater back to its former glory, triumphantly reopening on May 18, 1997, with a concert of Alan Menken and Tim Rice's musical, King David. The Lion King, Disney's second Broadway production, opened that fall and is still running on Broadway, having moved to the Minskoff Theater in 2006 to make room for Mary Poppins, which then closed in 2013. The New Amsterdam served as the inspiration for Moss Hart and George S. Kaufman's play, The Fabulous Invalid. And the story of its glorious birth, decline, and rebirth is the perfect embodiment of the idea behind the title of the play and our podcast. Today, the New Amsterdam is the proud home to Aladdin, where you can see Jacob Dickey perform 8 times a week. If you've never been inside, Google for some photos, or better yet, just grab a ticket to Aladdin.
It's Leslie here. That's our show. Thanks for listening, and you can hear us anytime on iTunes. The Fabulous Invalid is a production of O&M, etc., and the Fabulous Invalid LLC. Our theme music is by Lucky Chops, and today's episode was edited and engineered by Aaron Kaufman. Find us online at thefabulousinvalid.com and on social media at Fabulous Invalid, and be sure to tune in next Wednesday. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.